Welcome to a special bonus episode of Partner Ops Partner that includes video. And not only video, but my first ever guest. If you've listened to the podcast for any length of time, you know that it's basically me talking to myself in a room with a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, mostly to make myself feel better about what I do. Today, however, I have the special honor of hosting my first guest. This is Kenny from Partner Fleet. Now, if you don't know Partner Fleet, you will hopefully know a little bit more at the end of the day today. Kenny, welcome to Partner Ops Partner. Thanks for being my first guest.
Yeah, I'm super excited to be here. I know it's been a long time coming. We've been trying to set this up for a while, so glad it finally happened.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's interesting because you reached out to me months ago about maybe doing something like this. And then as our pre-show chat, I was saying, like, your star has risen. You've done way better, more higher profile events since then. So I just appreciate you kind of slumming it with me today, getting back into the trenches and having this conversation. Now, for the listener, the goal of this conversation is a 30-minute. It'll be longer than my normal podcast, so my apologies up front. I do try to keep it pretty tight. But we're going to move through a lot of things today with Kenny. I'm going to talk to Kenny about his driving forces, like what drove him into entrepreneurship. We're going to talk about a little bit about his company. We're going to talk about his history. I want to talk about his company values and kind of get towards some of the things that I tend to care about from an ops perspective. So with that, Kenny, first things first, tell me who you are, your role, your company, typical intro for the listeners.
Yeah, so I'm Kenny Brown, the CEO of Partner Fleet, co-founder. And just for you guys to get to know me a little better, my background is actually technical. So I was an engineer, moved into product management, moved into partnerships, but always focused on integrations, APIs, and all of that. And so it's been interesting to have that path to CEO.
I agree. You see, co-founder, who else are you co-founded with? Who else do we need to mention today?
Yeah. So Cody Sunkel's my other co-founder. His background is sales, but he ran channel and agency partnerships at a company that we actually worked at together when I was running tech partnerships. So we worked together, solving both sides of the equation, realized there was a gap for Partner Fleet and decided to go after it.
Got it. So my first exposure as well to Partner Fleet is actually Supernode, the original conference, not this year, but last year, because I was fortunate enough to get to go to that while I worked at Sixth Sense. And then I got basically assigned to your sponsorship event, which was a great dinner. I sat right across from Cody. I'll say this to his credit. We chatted like all night long, had a really great conversation. He never tooted the co-founder horn, like not even once. I knew he was at Partner Fleet, like, he's a very humble guy, and I had a really great time just getting to know you. You hosted a good event. So what was funny was I think I talked to you for a second there. I think I saw you Catalyst, and we talked for a second like outside of the Fluency event at the gaming lounge place. And like, that's it. We've been talking via email through Kelsey a little bit as well, trying to get this organized. Let's talk really quick. So you worked with Cody before. You're a co-founder with Cody now. What drove you into entrepreneurship from that technical path? Like, what was the trigger? You said you found a gap. What made you want to make the flip to entrepreneur?
Yeah, I mean, I'll actually, if it's okay, jump back a bit more in my background, just so if people can understand. I grew up on state aid. I grew up with not a lot of money. I grew up with my parents had a very ugly divorce. Police were involved, things like that. And so at a very young age, I made the decision that the number one thing to me was family. And so that also meant that I recognized I would need to be in a position to provide for that family. And so I went to college as an engineer. I got a programming degree, computer engineering degree, and started out with that. I was also incredibly awkward, where I would practice conversations in the elevator before I'd get to the office for like, how was your weekend and stuff like that. Like, that's who I was back then.
Yeah.
I got my first taste of real entrepreneurship at G2. So I was the 10th person at the company. They had 5 co-founders. So I was essentially the 5th employee that wasn't a founder on the engineering side. They had no revenue. They didn't have a path to revenue at the time. And I was just there building stuff and trying things out. And I loved it. And basically what happened is, as I was continuing to work at G2, anytime there was a project where they're like, I don't know how we're going to make it work, but we want to try it. So I'm going to make Kenny do it. And so I became that entrepreneur within a startup, trying all of these things. And that is actually where I fell in love with partnerships, because I was given the Salesforce partnership as my one of my projects. They're like, we don't know what it needs to
be. That's a big one.
We don't know what it is. Go do it. And that's what I did. And so that all led, like all of that led to me being like, okay, I love just building. I love solving problems and I love partnerships. And so kept doing that. And ultimately that's where, when I saw the gap, when I was at the company with Cody around how do you promote your partnerships? How do you have that marketplace? I knew the problems that existed there. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to go do it. I can go build this nights and weekends. And that's what I did actually for about 8 months before I brought Cody on. And I was like, hey, I'm now ready to sell this. Help me do it.
Okay. Well, several things I want to ask about real quick. First of all, quick yes or no, you got a degree in computer engineering. For anyone listening, is it worth it? Should you do that? Can you just get experience? Like, this is a complete sidebar, but in the current age, is it worth it to get a computer degree in your opinion, or can you do it on the side?
I think the answer is yes and no. I actually prefer to hire engineers who've done boot camps.
Interesting.
My personal experience with that is I actually want them to have had a different career beforehand, then go do a coding boot camp and then hire them, because the additional perspectives they add because they worked in construction or they worked as a teacher or they worked as something else before getting into coding makes their impact to the company that much more valuable. That being said, if you want to become a deep technical architect where you're designing massive systems or incredibly deep systems, a degree or even a master's is valuable.
Got it. Okay. I think that tracks with my experience too. I really appreciate that you're highlighting the value you get from other perspectives with coders. So my background, I've worked in operations. Right now, I'm heavily in operations, focused on partner ops. Everybody listening to this already knows that. But I also have experience in product. And so a lot of how I approach operational development, operational management comes from that product mindset. And my products, I was a certified Scrum product owner, worked with the dev team. And one of the big challenges that we face in partner operations, which I imagine lands within what you do with your customers as well, is, okay, at some point we have to translate your business requirements for what you want to do with your partners into a technical go live plan. And that falls on that, those technical needs sometimes fall on deaf ears when you just have technical people and business people and no one kind of interpreting in the middle. So if you bring developers in with that background, they get, I think they maybe have some of that speak ability, that communication ability that it maybe is gapped if you only ever do technical development. Yep. From the front. So I love that perspective a lot. Now you mentioned also, I want to go back up to this. You mentioned your family. So I'm going to bring this up. I have not a similar background in terms of like parents, all that, but I think my work ethic and that same drive for me in terms of I want to provide for my family. I want to be in work that makes me happy. I think that comes from my personal background as well. I grew up with parents who were mostly unhappy. They seemed to come home unhappy in the work they did, but they stayed at those employers for years and years and years. I saw my dad get laid off after 20 years. I saw my mom get laid off after she got disabled because of mold in the office. Like, I saw employees and companies just not taking care of their people, right? It's not like it used to be with the company store. It's not like my grandfather who spent 40 years at Ritter and had a pension. Like, right. That stuff is gone. And so I could definitely connect with you on that in terms of that entrepreneurial bug is always kind of there in the back of my mind of how do you take care of yourself when you do these things? Did working at G2, so you were early stage there, did that also have any influence in the concept behind Partner Fleet? Because if I look at G2 from the outside, it kind of feels like a marketplace of sorts.
It did. And it actually, I would say, the learning I had there was not just around the technology of what a marketplace is, how it works, but actually around the fact that people buy software differently now than they did 10 years ago. And that's where partnerships is, and the ecosystem world of partnerships comes into play a lot as well, because buyers are coming in differently than they did before. And both of those things tied together is where the idea came from.
That actually is a perfect segue. It's almost like you have my show notes on your side. It's a perfect segue into this next question and conversation I want to have with you around your go-to-market values. So I live in a system in a world where I get pinged by people pretty frequently in terms of they want to sell me things. Mm-hmm. And I am the most responsive. I'm not the easiest person to sell to. There may be some friends of mine on this call at Past Mentors who are like, that is selling is short, Aaron. I don't like to be sold to. I like to buy. One of the quotes from you were in, I think, one of your presentations for maybe the Cloud Software Alliance. The comment you had was the easiest path to new business is through the ecosystem. Can you talk about that a little bit, because you just hinted toward it, right? Like you see the value of partners, you come up with partners, you love partners. How's that influencing what you do at Partner Fleet in terms of growth and sales?
Yeah. One of the things I'll just preface with is that when we talk about the ecosystem, one of the things that I like to talk about, and Jared does a good job with this at Nearbound, is trust. And it's where do your buyers spend their time and spend their brain power? Is it looking for your solution? No, it's not. It's doing what they have to do every day. It's working with the people they work with every day, whether that's their customers, their vendors, whatever it is. And so that ecosystem of coming to them where they're already spending their time and where their trust already is, that's how I think about it. And so for us, over half our business comes from what we're calling ecosystem word of mouth. And that's either customers, but we're also working with communities like partnership leaders, like CSA. And we're finding that there's a lot of value in that larger ecosystem, but that ecosystem like didn't just happen for us. I was actually already in it for years and I just didn't think about it until I went to start my business. And so I was a member of Partnership Leaders back in 2020. I think it was the tail end of 2020 is when I joined, before they were actually like charging for subscriptions and all of that. That's where I started to build my network. But then like Cody has a different background of his network. And we've actually been very successful at using the human capital element of our networks to help us grow and continue to grow. And we're generating more of that, I feel like, as we go.
So to say, would you say that at this point, in terms of like your business growth and go-to-market rhythms, it sounds like it's predominantly through referrals and through community building as opposed to direct marketing? I mean, I can say this, when I'm online, I don't see you guys doing a lot of direct marketing ads, things like that. I see you engaging on posts. I see Cody engaging on posts. You're involved in this network event or that network event. Is that your primary method for driving in new business at this point?
It is. And it comes down to the fact that for a company our size, people are taking a bet on us, me and Cody, more than they're taking a bet on what the product is today. And so we want to prove to them that we're real. We're not just in it for the money. We actually want to help them solve problems. And we come back, it's reciprocal. Like, we're not just out there to generate business. If I do a webinar or something like this and help someone out and they never talk to me after that, I'm perfectly okay with it. I want to help out as much as I'm getting out of it. And that's a lot of the approach we're taking as a go-to-market as well.
So I'll say this, I had the privilege of being in a role, and I won't talk about the company or the deal particularly, right? But I had the privilege of being in a role where you were in contention, right? In terms of, hey, we're looking at the tech, we're looking at making decisions about what we're going to do in the space. And, you know, from my perspective, and I came in real late to the thing, and I think decisions were already made. So I'm like coming in going, hey, I know these people, this is kind of fun. How's it coming from a business perspective? And when you just talk about the product, when you just talk about, to your point, right? Like your early stage, you guys have what, less than 10 employees right now, I think?
We're just now at 10.
Just now at 10. Congratulations. That's fun. But when I look at like your path to market, you mentioned it earlier, you've got a background in integration. So it's no surprise that 10 months ago, you announced Chili Pepper. 9 months ago, you announced Partner Stack. 8 months ago, you announced Walnut. Now you're currently working on a state of the integrations survey, industry survey that I think you're promoting. I'll include that in the show notes as well for anyone who wants to go do that or participate in that. Like, it's no surprise to me as we talk, right, that integrations are a big part of what I see in your commentary history there. But also as a product, when I go back to this original comment, like in this thing, the product itself felt really competitive to what else to the products in the market. And to your point, the risk factor was, well, size of the company. It just felt like a risk factor, you know, in this particular instance. Is that a common factor for you? Like you're saying, taking a bet on us as humans, but is that a common thing that you hear right now in your flow? And what's your typical response on that?
It definitely comes up. And the part of the response is, it's kind of two part. We've got investors behind us who like, hey, that's one. We've got investors, we've got money, we're going to continue growing. But those investors have a combined multi-billion dollar set of exits. they're working with us and they're not just money. Like we meet with them on a regular, at least monthly cadence, where it's more of them helping us out. And so we've got that additional piece to show, yes, we're small, but we're backed in a way that we're going to continue to grow and be successful, which is really important.
But I guess that also doesn't come up in a sales process, right? Like if someone needs to, I don't know how often you get the direct feedback of, guys, we like the platform, we like you guys, but we're concerned about the size of your company. Do you hear that explicitly called out in these calls, or do you feel like it's more of a, we think that's why they went somewhere else, but nobody told us?
Honestly, directly called out in a call, not normally. More often than not, the where it goes is, are they moving forward with the project or are they going to do it themselves? And so it's, those are the most common ones, which I think anyone can empathize with. However, the
do it yourself, partner tech. Yes. Oh, that's a whole nother podcast we could talk about. I bet that makes you cringe every time, right?
It is, because it's also like, not to dive too deep into what PartnerFleet does today, but a lot of people will see the marketplace aspect and see like, oh, my marketing team could spin up a page like that design-wise pretty quickly. And candidly, yes, but that marketplace feature, what you're seeing, is the culmination of all the other stuff we've done around building, making it self-serve, making your partners have access, creating a partner onboarding experience, and all of that. That your marketing team can't do all of the back end stuff that culminates in that one page.
Yeah. Or beyond that too, operationally, the thing that I think about when I look at what you guys do, and I do want to give you a second, we're going to flip and talk specifically about the product in just a second. But one of the things that I will push back on too when I'm looking at partner tech is to say, cool, marketing team, you can spin up a marketing site. Great. Who's going to manage all the listings? Do you want to do it? Oh, no, we can't do that. Partner team will do it. Okay. Yeah. How are you going to let the partner? Well, they can just submit a ticket to us. Like, nope, that's not going to work. So basically, every time you want to make a change to a partner, partner improves the integration or they add a new feature, or they want to make an update, we have to come to you. We have to figure out how to submit a ticket, which could be a Slack. It could be an email. It could be as sophisticated as a Jira ticket. I don't know, but it's process that we have to build out to support your rhythm. And then we have to wait on you from the design side to go make this editing change on text when this is, and oh, by the way, none of this is connected to the CRM.
Yep.
Right? It's not centralized.
And that's the thing too. Like when I go back to why we wanted to do this, I was running a team on partnerships. Cody had a team on partnerships. We had zero dedicated resources in marketing or in sales operations to do things in sales. We had none of those.
Anywhere else. You're begging and borrowing from, that's what I tell people with partner ops. It's like, partner ops, like, when we show up, usually there's a sense of relief, but it's also overwhelming because up until that point, partnership managers and partnership leaders have been begging, borrowing, and stealing resources from every other team, trying to get them to understand why they need help. Yep. And then that, it becomes an inherited problem for partner ops. Like, okay, good. Nobody still understands. So real quick then, let's just talk about PartnerFleet. Kelsey said in one of the videos that I watched for all this, she referred to you guys as a no-code partner marketplace. Why is that an important call out? What would you want to say outside of that about PartnerFleet in like a 2-3 sentence blurb?
Yeah. So why that's important is what we just talked about. You don't have resources. You have to borrow resources from marketing or borrow resources from engineering, which means they're not working on something else to launch the marketplace, but also the partner onboarding experience, the applications, the workflows, all of that. You're begging someone else to help you build that. And what we've launched is a way for you to have that end-to-end experience from a partnership saying they're interested to them showcasing themselves to your customers without having to borrow a marketing resource or an engineering resource to make it happen.
Yeah. Okay. So you're a PRM.
We are not. That's the key difference. And I love that you said it that way because I knew you could tell right away that's not what it is.
Yeah.
Our approach differs from a PRM is a PRM is really about that, I would say still an outbound motion, right? People are sending you leads that you're following up on, you're making payouts. Yes, you're certifying solutions partners as well in some PRMs and you have that process, but it's all for that outbound motion, right? Of educating your partners to bring you more deals. Where we come in is the inbound side of that. The marketplace is like HubSpot compared to the CRM or the PRM, which is like Salesforce, right? HubSpot Marketing Automation versus Salesforce, which is the PRM. So we're approaching it from a different perspective on that. We also recognize that not every single partner is going to be registering deals. Integration partners may register some, but they're not all referral partners. And so having that unique experience in one place for all of your tech partners or even agency partners, that's where we're approaching it from.
Okay. I actually really like that distinction. And yes, that was a loaded question. I think you probably know at this point, I have pretty strong opinions about the PRM industry and the PRM marketplace. And one of the things that I think has actually attracted me to your company, your solution, is your human-centered approach. Every time I've talked to you, which has always been brilliant, or the longer conversations I've been able to have with Cody, there's real people, right? He is such a low-pressure sales. He's like, hey, like every time it's like, hey, how can I help you? And some people might hear that and think, well, you got to be high pressure to close deals. But I just don't think that's your culture, right? Like you want to work with customers that want to work with you. And if it's a high pressure to close or that's just not going to jive, I think, with what you're trying to achieve with your company. Is that a fair statement?
It is. It's also all relationship based. We are now in the position where we sold to and had a deal cycle with at a previous company are now at a new company and they're coming back to us. They didn't purchase before. Some of them did, but some of them didn't. And they're still coming back to us because they like how we approach it and they like the solution that we've built.
Yeah. Okay. So real quick, then a couple of operational questions because I've got an audience for this kind of stuff. Time to launch. If somebody says, hey, we want to do it, we're good to go. I'm sure it has a lot of variables. On average, how fast can you get somebody up and running with? Well, no, let's clarify. Listeners, if you don't know, the platform is actually multifaceted in terms of what you can get from it. So I'll call it out and you tell me if I'm wrong. There is a marketplace. That was, I think, one of your driving initial product offerings. This year, you launched the in-app marketplace, which allows you to embed the same marketplace listings. And I imagine have some selective control over, nope, we're going to put some of these inside of our core product to integrate and to turn on and to access without having to go outside. And then I think what everybody would just call is a directory, which is a pretty standard listing of partners, maybe with some legion. Is that right? Yeah. Like, am I kidding the high level stuff of what you guys are offering? Am I missing anything?
No, that's correct. We've got the marketplace and then we do have a partner portal, but it's really geared towards bringing partners in and driving them to that directory or marketplace experience.
Inbound, we put that on my website and kind of drive partners in for this particular rhythm, which I imagine, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but I imagine you could easily or hopefully have some tie in too. Great. There's also other rhythms and other programs and other things, and you can build in those rhythms to link into PRM or create some relatively seamless experiences. Is that all right? Is that all fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
So back to your question of time to launch, right? We've had several customers where they had something in place today. It was 2 weeks, right? They signed the contract. They had basically parity set up within 2 weeks. And then they went and added all the features that they didn't have before for their marketplace and their program. Would launch phase two a few weeks after that. We've also had a majority of our customers sit in that 2 month window though. Where there's essentially one major unlock happening every week. The first week is your first 2 weeks are usually training and then starting to configure the system and then get all the partners on board and all of that.
Okay. That's a really important call out then, because what it sounds like you set up is a self-manageable system.
Correct.
Is that fair? Like you're going to train me on how to manage the platform and then I have access to all the core settings I would need to take this live maybe as fast or as slow as I want.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
And one of the key things about go live is not to the point where you're bringing partners in. It's actually to the point where you're presenting it to your customers. And so that is actually a pretty high bar for some companies. Versus, you know, giving them access to the partners to come in and start filling out their content and doing all of that can happen when not everything else is wired up exactly or configured exactly how they want it. But then that go live to customers is different.
I love that. I'll say that's another headache that I typically have when I get into partner tech. I'm a very hands-on admin. I like to understand how things work technically. I want to know, where do I change the setting? How do I do that? I don't want to have to wait on support. I'm also, I come from this mindset of true SaaS, right? The true SaaS company is one where I can sign up, I can pay, I never have to talk to anybody and I can turn it on and use it. Lots and lots and lots of companies don't have that set up. Like, there are some big PRM players that don't have that set up. There's always something kind of locked behind support. So operationally, I know I like to hear that, but it also kind of sounds like launch is really based on you, customer.
Yep.
As fast as you want to go, the resources you want to put in, PartnerFleet is willing to be there to support whatever schedule works best for your efforts. Is that fair?
Yep. And it's also, we usually phase it out because we'll have a lot of customers that'll launch the public marketplace. And then 6 months later is their goal to launch that in-app marketplace. And so it definitely, we move as fast as they want to. We're not as far yet as everything being completely self-serve within the platform, because there are some admin switches we need to hit every once in a while, but those are very few and far between.
Yeah, I don't know that you can get, fully get away from it,
right?
I talk to people in terms of like user design when I talk about I'm building systems or rhythms, right? I have user-proof design goals. And people are like, well, that's not possible. I know it's not possible. But if that's my goal, I'm going to have a much better system than if it's not my goal. I can give up 20% on that concept. But if I get 80% user-proof in most systems, that's a really phenomenally tight system that most users won't get to experience. So again, I think it's about having ideals. And for me, that notion of true SaaS, how much can I control? How often do I have to come in and ask for help? Most of the time, that stuff seems to be around enabling feature sets. Like, oh, we need to turn that on for you, or we need to pay, you know, gated access and stuff. So I think that's consistent. I will say I like to hear that because I wasn't aware of that in terms of how you do it. What are we not asking? We're getting up toward the end of our time too. So I want to get through a couple questions here, and then I want to get to a hot topic with you. What are we not asking in a couple of seconds here about marketplace? What do people not ask that they should be asking in the buying process?
I think one of the key things is really analyzing whether or not you need one is the appetite of your customers to actually engage with your partners. Mm-hmm. Because what the marketplace does is it creates that reciprocity automatically, right? Your partners, just by being on the marketplace, will start to generate leads. They'll start to generate interest without you having to go to your CSM team and say, hey, which customers can I send over to these partners? Now you just go to your CSM team and say, hey, start promoting the marketplace to your customers, and they'll engage naturally because that's how they want to buy. They don't want you to sell them on a partner. And so
that sounds twofold. Does your customer want this?
Yes.
Really interesting question, because I could definitely see you would launch it and put it out there and you get no engagement. And that's maybe the first time somebody goes, oh, this isn't how our customers buy.
Yep.
Right. And that's going to look like a problem for you. That's like people who buy Salesforce and after 2 years of not investing in any customization and be like, well, Salesforce is a terrible CRM, because you could say the same thing about HubSpot or any other PRM. Correct. Like, well, if you didn't invest in the plan, you can't blame the tech solution for not meeting its goal. What else were you going to say? I interrupted you there. I just wanted to get that in.
Yeah. I mean, that ultimately sums it up, but that's one of the biggest challenges that I face in partnerships is the reciprocity piece was a lot of effort, but it was actually the most valuable way to start generating new business for myself, right? I'd give them one thing, they'd give me three or four. And so the marketplace, that's one of the reasons we built it as well, is customers want to buy that way. But partners need to get that interaction because they'll start to see the value and come back for more.
Yeah. And that sounds like I think a trend within the industry, give to get, right?
Yep.
Trying to recognize that in a partnership ecosystem, you're building trusted relationships. Not all of us are Salesforce, Adobe, Microsoft. We can't just come in and set the terms for how our partners are going to work and expect them to do it. We're not hyperscalers, and very few of us will ever be hyperscalers at the end of the day. That's rarefied air. So I think what you're talking about goes to that mutual growth. How do we be successful? How do you be successful? Next question, because I want to keep us moving because we're getting close to the end of our time.
Yep.
State of partner tech, 2 minutes. Where are things headed with partner tech? What are you excited about? What do you think is going to happen in the industry? How's AI impacting what you're doing?
Yeah, I think high level, we're seeing that same renaissance that marketing automation saw at the beginning of, 2010. And you probably heard this from a bunch of people. But I've actually been talking to VCs about that idea, and that's getting them more excited in partner tech. And when you see that start to happen, that's when categories really get what they need put behind them, is when there's VC money in. And then all of a sudden the companies are actually like, oh, I need to have a leader for partnerships that has a budget, and it's all this moving trend, and we're seeing that all happen now. That being said, one distinction I want to make is partner tech, all of the new stuff we're focusing on, a lot of it is geared towards B2B SaaS companies instead yep. of the traditional distribution companies, or like a Dell or a Samsung, right? All of those are the traditional channel companies. And when we talk about challenges PRMs face, they're amazing for those industries. The challenges they face is moving into B2B SaaS, and that's where a lot of this new tech is coming in. And I think the challenges that we're going to face and all of the other new tech is B2B SaaS big enough? And how do we service the traditional channel at the same point?
Man, I should have led with that question. We could talk for another half hour about some of that, because you hit some interesting points and made some of the things you just said. One, distinguishing with the PRM market, right? Recognizing that was built on and around. Really, if you look at all the PRMs that I know of, at least the major players, they're all built on through channel marketing automation, TCMA.
Correct.
Like that's where they started. Then they began to add features as company. Again, same, I think probably what you're looking at too, right? What features are people asking you for? What are they wanting? And then you guys have a niche. You have a focus, right? So I'm imagining from our conversation so far and what I know, you're not building everything people ask all the time, because you know what you want to be and you're trying to be that. You've already segmented it out. Like there's a whole nother type of partnerships model that we don't have technology to support. You're working in that industry. So in that sense, would you rather partner or build to meet your customer needs?
We partner a lot to meet customer needs. So we have... Actually, a really good example of this is a partnership that's going to be launching in January. So I won't name names yet, but we're going to
looking
be fully
for an exclusive, Kenny. Yeah. Go ahead.
We're going to be fully embedded within their portal experience today. So they'll still get all the benefits of the partner fleet marketplace, but their partners won't have to go to another place, or changes they make in that system will reflect within partner fleet and all of that. Benefit the partners greatly from that cohesiveness, but also bringing in the analytics into one system. And so when we get big questions, and the number one is deal reg, do we do deal reg? No, we don't.
Yeah.
Because you can go find 30 other PRMs that do. That's not the direction we're going.
Yeah. But the thing is, all those PRMs then are going to come back and be like, well, hey, you know, we have a locator. You know, we have partner marketplace, like they have versions of what you do, but they're like, not to be rude to those companies, but they tend to be secondary concepts, right?
Correct.
Very limited. You get tied into it. And that comes back down to like SaaS stickiness. There's two types of stickiness. And when I hear the word stickiness, I need to understand, are you talking about like the gross kind, or like the, this is the thing, this is a really fantastic dessert, I want to keep eating it because it's so good kind of sticky. Yeah. And I as an ops professional, I want flexibility in my solutions, because I'm when I look at the industry, Jim McMahon talked about this last week, 38 PRM vendors with $730 million in market cap. That is not a lot of market cap to spread out over 38 vendors, right? That tells me something's going to shift, something's going to happen. And that includes companies that aren't even down there. I don't know how many vendors are in your space. I didn't have time to do that research to find out. But I know virtually every PRM I've ever looked at has features comparable to what you have, right? But you would probably argue that they're still not doing what you do as well as you do.
Yeah. So that comes back to they built that feature because a specific customer asked them to, and then they're trying to be everything for everyone. And that ship has sailed. People don't buy that way anymore. They want their best in class solution. And so there are several of our partners who have a partner locator, but we still work with them because companies come to us and them because they want the best PRM and the best marketplace.
Yeah, I like that. I like that you called it out. The everything to everyone is, I can tell you this from an ops professional who's on the side of, I'm currently going to be looking at vetting tech in my full-time gig. Like, I am not looking for that end all be all solution, because I've done enough of these already to know that it doesn't exist. There's always caveats. There's always shortcomings, and then trying to make it work with other platforms doesn't work. So it's more about, for me, it's insights. What insights can you provide that I don't currently have?
Yep.
And how do you make workflows seamless? And another one that's growing for me is, how do you give my team agency to do partnership work in a more free way within the company. That's becoming a larger priority for me.
And that's one of the big focuses for us, is like one of the features that is currently in beta is buyer intent. And so we're going to identify who's looking at your listing on the marketplace. I talk about this a lot, but the value that brings into partnerships, because now you have these known unknowns that were not likely in your CRM or maybe not even in your partner system, but now you have indicators that they're interested in you and your partner at the same time. And that can kickstart a co-sell process, right? And so inbound indicators driving sales is something partnerships have never really had before. And that's not something that a PRM with a partner locator is going to focus on.
Absolutely. And now you're getting into, I was at Sixth Sense for a while too, right? So intent-based data, co-selling rhythms, attribution's the big name of the game as well. Like, we could spend hours talking about this. We are at time. I want to respect your time, the time you've given me today. Hot topic question, and we'll talk about this and I'll let you go. I told you to start. I'm going to give you two options here, two different categories, and then I'm going to ask you a question that you don't have any prep for in that category. And the categories were sports or Star Wars. Which category do you want to pick?
I'm going to cheat a little bit and say Star Wars, because it might be hard to see, but that's actually a lightsaber. And
I didn't know if that was a lightsaber or a Catan. And then I did see this TIE fighter back there.
TIE fighter. There's actually Grogu and R2-D2 back there that are Legos.
Fantastic. You can see him blurred out. My sister got me a big Grogu head, like right here. That's a bobblehead Grogu. And I've stuck a heck hat on him so he doesn't bobble as much. Okay. Star Wars question. And I don't want to make anybody mad. Okay. So I'm going to ask this question. And if you get really mad, you just let me know on comments, shoot me LinkedIn messages. Kenny, yes or no? Rogue One is the best Star Wars movie ever made.
Yes. And
yes, this is how I knew we'd be friends. I had a feeling. I was like, he's going to be a yes guy. And now we are friends for life.
Yeah, it is far my favorite. It's the most, and I think it's because there's no chance of extending it. Like, they didn't have to leave stuff to the imagination because everybody knows what happens. And so they just made the best movie they could.
And some people said, like, but you already know what's going to happen. I'm like, yeah, you do. But the way they told the story.
Yes.
All right. Favorite, did you have a favorite thing in the movie? I have two things to call out. And then we'll actually sign off. Any favorite moments or things that make it stand above the rest for you?
I mean, one of the things that I love about it is they actually brought in the same Red Squadron from the episode 4. So those scenes where they're coming in are actually the same people, same voices that they were. And I believe some of them were even
used
screen from or film from the original New Hope.
That's cool. See, that's like a behind the scenes, like, Easter egg type thing. I did not know that. That is pretty cool. That is fascinating. For me, well, one, I'll say, like, and if you haven't seen Rogue One, guys, spoilers, but man, you're way too late. The very beginning of the movie, when Ander has to basically, like, kill his fellow rebel to escape because the urgency of the mission outweighs saving. Like, I was like, oh, that's not the tone that I've ever seen set for the Rebel Alliance in any of the Star Wars movies, but that is very much like an espionage themed thing to do. Like, that told me this whole thing is going to be different, for one. And then the whole movie played out that same way. And then I think that was the first time I ever saw Darth Vader on screen and went like, oh, that's Darth Vader. He's terrifying. Like, the last few seconds clip, like, you're just like, that was legitimately a terrifying scene. And then I think they've done a good job of playing that into some of the series they have out, like where they're bringing back Hayden Christensen. I'm just like, this is why it's a hot topic. It's completely off the side, nerding out. Kenny, any last thoughts today before we shut down the recording, call it a day?
I really appreciate you having me on. Glad again that we were able to finally make it work.
Absolutely.
Love what you're doing, and I follow along with all this stuff, all the content you put out, and it's all fantastic.
I appreciate that a lot. Where do people go to learn more about you, Partner Fleet? You're on LinkedIn, right?
I'm on LinkedIn. I offer time with anyone. So if you want to just get to know me or I can help you in any way, feel free to reach out on LinkedIn. And then our website, partnerfleet.io.
Partner Fleet. Great. Listeners, thank you for extending your time with me today. I don't know how excited you are, but I've been excited about this. This is my first guest. No promises that I'll do any more, by the way. I would love to, if you're a tech company founder in particular, and you would love to have a chat like this or see value, reach out. I love talking to tech people. I love talking to founders. Thanks for tuning in to Partner Ops Partner. Good luck partnering.